Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. The statistics on abuse in this country, actually around the world, in my mind's view, are horrific. And my guest today, Hannah Murray, is a, well, she's got a story to share that I think when you hear it, you're just sort of going to hold your breath wondering how this woman could have even survived the situation she did. But the fact is she did, and she wrote her story, lived to tell it, for the purpose of educating men and women, but primarily women, to be aware that you have choice in your life, and there are times when you must challenge your own culture. And whatever your background may be, you have to challenge it. You have to be willing to speak up and speak out and stand your ground so that you can take charge of your life. My guest today, Hannah Murray, her book, Lived to Tell It. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
You are a woman that I just, you know, I really, when I read your story, when I went through it, I just shook my head and said, and I said this to you before we came on the air, you had a lot more compassion towards your former spouse than I think I would have ever had, just knowing my own personality. Mm-hmm. And yet you really managed to go through some changes. Now, I want my audience to know that you are of Yugoslavian background.
Yes.
And you really had been raised in a cultural environment where the woman was seen and not heard. You were given no options, really, regarding marriage. In fact, in your cultural environment, you, if you weren't married by the time you were 20, you were an old maid. Good Lord, that's something that was culturally so prevalent in the 1800s, early 1900s even, the attitude of, oh, if you're not married, if you don't have a family by the time you're 20, 21 years of age, then you're just an old maid. Nobody's ever going to want you. Thank goodness so much of that is gone. However, in your culture, that wasn't the case. It still is supported in many, many ways, but not to the degree it was. Give us a little information about your background, because you had such a lovely family.
Well, yes, I do have a wonderful family. They were very strict, especially with the daughters. I was brought up with a lot of love and a lot of kindness, and I was absolutely very happy as a child. I had nothing missing in my life. My family were the greatest support, the greatest loves of my life, and they still are. But the way I was raised is really, it was normal to me because my mother was married this way, my grandmother, and so on and so forth. So being raised where you needed to be married no later than a very late teenage years, maybe 18, 19, was a custom. It was mm-hmm. just the way it was supposed to be. So, yes, my marriage wasn't of an arranged marriage. And although I went, and this happened in America, in Michigan.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
it's not like I was still living in the old country. I was born in Yugoslavia, but I came to the United States when I was 10 months old. But still, my family was of that type of upbringing. They still wanted to provide the culture and the upbringing of how they were.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, tell us about a little bit about the marriage process that you went through. And I don't know that this is so prevalent today, but there is a lot of this mentality in so many cultural backgrounds, and this goes back centuries, because women were disempowered. They weren't supposed to be educated. They weren't supposed to go through things. And you were in school at the time you were married, And here in the United States, and you didn't even want to tell the kids that you were in school with because you were still, you know, you're a teenager. That's what you were.
Yes.
And when they heard about it, they just said, you're nuts.
Well, it was different. I'll tell you that. Yes, I was in high school, and I got married right before my senior year. So when I returned back to school as a senior, I was Mrs. Yoonjae. I was no longer Hannah LaJuri. So I had to notify the school and the office and also all my friends that I got married over the summer break. And they never knew of this guy because, you know, in today's, well, it's always been like this in America where boy meets girl, boy dates girl. You know, they fall in love and they get married. Well, it was a little different. Mine was an arranged marriage, and how that works is like this. The boy sees the girl, and in my case, it was a church. He saw me at church for the first time. So what he does is he notifies his family, his parents, and says, I've seen a girl that I'm very interested in, and I'd like to go, you know, see her up close at her home and kind of like view her, if you will. It sounds degrading, but it just that's the way it is. So what he mm-hmm. did is he made the arrangements with his family, where his family contacted my family and said we would like to come over. Well, I was 15 years old at that time. I was 15 years old, and my parents knew exactly what this visit was entailing. They knew exactly that there was a young man that was interested in their daughter and wanted to come in over and see her and decide there that if this is the one that he would like to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. He came over, and I brought out the appetizers and hors d'oeuvres and kind of served everyone there. And while I never said a word, you're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to speak to anyone. You just kind of go back and forth, and he looks at you and checks you out, if you will, and makes certain that you are the one that he would like to marry. And he did ask for my hand in marriage through my family, and the first time he asked, actually, my family thought that he was a fine young man, very educated, had a great job, and at that time, he was 19. Mm-hmm. So he was a very young man as well. But my family just thought at that time I was a little too young. They were just concerned about my age, and they said, I'm sorry, but, you know, this is not the time for her to get married. Well, this young man waited an entire year and did not ask for anybody else's hand in marriage, was determined to have me as his wife, and came back a year later. And when my family saw that determination in him, then at 16, they said, yes, you mm-hmm. you may marry my daughter, our daughter. And then I was basically engaged, and through that entire engagement, I told none of my friends, not that I was ashamed of it, because this is what I was raised up in, and this was normal to me. It's mm-hmm. just I've seen, you know, my friends and whatnot go out and date and such, and I just kind of thought that they wouldn't understand our culture and how we do things, so I just never said anything. I just kept it to myself. Mm-hmm. And then a year came by, and at 17, 2 weeks after my 17th birthday, I became his wife.
Mm-hmm. And through the marriage ceremony, I found it interesting that you were obliged to stand up at your table all night long while everybody is celebrating. You were kept in this positioning mm-hmm. that represented the end of a life in association with your family and going with a new association with the husband. And it's just very interesting to me, the patterns of old cultures. And it was as if you were a piece of property on display. And excuse me for making that kind of statement, but you weren't allowed to participate in anything during the whole event, and this is your wedding.
Yes. Well, back, you know, I think it's been over 28 years now that this marriage took place, my first marriage took place. That was our custom. That was our tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And back then as well, Now, mind you, please, things have changed and they've loosened up a little bit where it's a little different today. But back then, my family was not even allowed to come to my family, to my wedding there. My family was not allowed to be at my wedding. The mother, the father, your siblings, cousins, whomever you had, was not allowed to show up and be in the celebratory of my wedding. And yes, you are absolutely correct. I had my own bridal table, and all night long I was standing, holding my bouquet like a statue where everybody can view the bride as they eat and drink and dance and just have a wonderful time.
Fascinating. Cultural patterns are fascinating. You wonder how many hundreds of years ago that was implemented. I mean, whether it was affected by the Mongolians or what happened, but here it is. Here you have this. Now, the thing is, on January 9th, 1991, it was a Wednesday morning.
Yes.
Your whole life was dramatically changed. Tell us what happened on that day.
What happened on that day is this, Donna. I was on the phone with one of my coworkers. I had just had a baby in the middle of November. So I just had a newborn, and I was on the phone speaking with some of my coworkers. And all of a sudden, my husband walks in a rage during lunchtime. And things had progressed prior to this day. And things have been happening prior to this day. So at that day that you're asking about, when he walked in a rage, I was frightened for my life because I did not know what was going to happen. So I basically stalled and continued to talk on the phone, hoping that he would calm down a bit. And when I didn't see his whereabouts, I hung up the phone, said my goodbyes, and proceeded to go into the bedroom, the master bedroom. All of a sudden, I hear him on the other side of the house screaming out for me, "Hannah, where are you?" And I yell back, "I'm in the master bedroom." So the house is literally shaking as he's running down the house, stomping his feet. And when he got into the master bedroom, I came out of the master bath, and I was there on the door wall. And he was in a complete rage, out of control. His face was red and black, and his hair was all messed up. I have to say I had never seen him like that. I mean, he scared me to death. And in his hand, he had a weapon that was in a sock. And I could make out that it was a gun, the way the sock was pulled all the way back and had this, the shaping of the gun. And he just looked at me, and as he's waving the gun, he's yelling at me, "Did you get the money?" And I said, "Paul, what money? I don't know where to go and get this money." And he said, "You know what to do. Did you get my money?" And before I could even finish my thought, my sentence, that no, I didn't get the money, he said, "Well, if I don't get it from you alive, I'll get double from you dead." And he raised his hand up, and he pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm. Now, he ended up calling 911.
Yes.
And one of the things that he said, and he said it twice on the phone, "There has been a murder. There has been a murder."
Yes.
And there's other words. And detectives that heard this, people came over to your house, and there you were, and they got you to the hospital. And you had a phenomenal surgeon that was able to save your life. But he had shot you point blank. And then he went into this denial of what he had done and was just, he was a pathological liar, basically.
Yes.
And when you were in the hospital, you had survived. You're extremely weak. And he comes up to you, wants to know, nobody's around. He wants to know if you can hear him, and you manage to let him know that, yes, you can hear him. And he said, this is what he said. This just blew me away. "Listen and listen good. I told the police and I told everyone that I shot you by accident. If you tell anyone, I shot you on purpose for money, I'll kill your brother and your father, and then I'm going to come and kill you. And if I'm in jail and I can't get you, I have my brother and my hitmen already set up to destroy you. Do you understand? Now, to have someone say something like that to you, you're either going to become paralyzed with fear, or you're going to say, I got news for you. I got another friends in the police department. You're dead meat. But you were terrified.
Yes.
You were a young woman. You're totally incapacitated in the hospital because he shot you at point-blank range. You are terrified for your family because you know that if your father finds out about this, he'd kill him.
Yes.
Because there's that in the culture.
Oh,
your
yes.
father would go and would kill your husband, and the Yugoslavian community is an extremely tight community.
Yes.
And if your father knew about this, he would have destroyed his own life to get rid of the man that tried to destroy yours. But you
Absolutely.
Wouldn't allow that to happen. You took a very, very different stance. Now, with all of this horrific stuff going on, you end up going back with him. You have two beautiful little girls. One is very small. And it was your daughter that was with you after you were shot. How did that affect her?
Well, I did go back because as I was in the hospital and he said those words to me, I was paralyzed in fear, and I trusted his threats because I looked around and I was already in the hospital from the shooting. So I believed him completely. So I did decide to sacrifice my life just to save my little brother, my only brother, and my father, my mom, and eventually, you know, my children too, because I didn't even know what he was capable of doing. If he shot the mother of his children, these other people mean nothing to him. So mm-hmm. I did go back, and I did return with my, I had a two-year-old at the time. But I was not strong enough to care for my newborn, so my mom held her back and took care of her for a while because he wanted me back at the house. He was just so frightened that the truth would come out, and he felt that I was here at the house and he was always looking over me and knowing my whereabouts, that this wouldn't come out and it would just die down eventually, all the gossip and the talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's
not
the case.
No, it was not the case. But, you know, luckily, I thank God that my daughters are very intelligent, very strong women. They are not affected by this in any way, shape, or form. And I do believe it was the love and the closeness of the family bond that we have
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. was the best remedy, the best therapy for us is our closeness and our tightness of our family. And we've always had that. And we will always continue to have that. So
now, in February of 1991, there was a Lieutenant Sherchik and Officer Krauss. Both of those law enforcement officers were at the house, and when this situation had evolved, they made sure they got evidence. Now, they needed to have you testify, but you flatly refused because of what your former spouse had said to you in the hospital. They knew you were lying. But they couldn't do anything. And everything inside of you said, tell them the truth. They would have nailed him right then and there. He wouldn't have been able to harm you. But you waited for a while, and you had to reach a point where you knew you had to dig down inside yourself and pull up courage that was going to salvage the family, because your husband, you found out, had gotten involved with drugs, was heavily addicted to cocaine, and was doing all kinds of stuff, and was really going off the deep end. And your story about how you managed to go through this and finally reach that point is really significant. But you finally did go to these officers and tell them everything, because you knew this man had to be accounted for, because he would destroy you, your family, and your children. He was definitely going that way.
Mm-hmm.
What was the trigger that made you decide to stand up and to fight him, to overcome your own fear?
Well, during the time after I came back to him in February, in fact, it was on his birthday that he insisted that I come back to him. Months were going by, and throughout all those months, I was hoping that whatever he needed this money for was resolved while I was recovering from the shooting. But that was not the case. I was being threatened with guns and knives and machine guns, Uzis. I mean, I found so many weapons in my home hidden in different places. I was just, I can't even explain the fear that was going through me. So I decided to finally go and share with my mom what was happening, because I was so afraid that he is just going to kill me and my family would never know the truth. So when I did go to my mom's and I told her what had happened originally, I made her swear on my brother's life, on my brother's head, that she would never, ever tell anyone what I'd been going through and what had originally happened. And that evening, she got sick and she had a heart attack because of everything that I told her. She was absolutely floored by all this, and she got so stressed out that, first of all, she was not able to tell my father, and secondly, she was just so fearful, okay, am I even going to make it by morning? She was just sickened and frightened to death about all this. So she had a heart attack. My father called me the next morning and said, can you please come and take care of your brother? Your mom is super sick. The ambulance is picking her up. She just had a heart attack. And I knew right there, Donna, that I caused this heart attack for her. Mm-hmm. There was no other reason why she just had a heart attack the very next day. So I had to ask my husband, this is what's going on. Can I please go there? And he goes, well, I want you there just for a little bit. I mean, he was so in control of me. It was just disgusting. It was sickening. But I did pack my kids, and I went there. Well, I stayed there a little longer than anticipated. And while I was over there, my husband at the time was calling me, threatening me on the phone. Hurry up. I want you home now. I don't care if she's not feeling any better, this and that. And what triggered it was when he said to me, if you don't come home by this evening, I'm going to throw a bomb in that house. And your family and the kids and you will all be dead, all in one shot. And that frightened me. And because of all the different weapons that I have seen through all those months of being with him, I then decided to pack my kids and go right to the police station and let them know that the incident that happened back in January was not an accident. It was on purpose. And I explained the entire story to them. And the Lieutenant Sirchak was there, actually. And he said to me, we know, Hannah. We know that this was not an accident. But you tied our hands up. We could not go after him because you were our main witness and you dropped all the charges. But go home, not to worry. I'm putting police surveillance around the house 24 hours, and he will never hurt you again.
Now, on July 20th, 1991, they went after him. They picked him up, and there were a lot of officers there. They surrounded the house because you had told him about the Uzi that he had in there, all of the weapons that you had found. You informed them about everything you had discovered, so they were prepared. They went in. They said, we've got a dangerous individual here. And he finally came out and surrendered. And what they found when they went into the house, they found an unregistered gun in the master bedroom, a bulletproof vest on the rear floorboard of his car.
Yes.
And your former spouse pretended he couldn't understand what was happening, and, of course, you were lying about everything. But these guys knew better. They had already seen everything. They knew that that wasn't the case. And finally, your father found out. You had to tell your father. Paul, your former husband's brother, was totally under his control, and with the attitudes from the old world thinking, Paul was willing to go to jail, and his brother was going to take care of what Paul hadn't finished.
Yes.
So all of this stuff is going on, and your dad really, really was not happy at all. But the result was, finally, after a lot of court problems, and Paul was caught lying, your former spouse, in so many ways, but he went to prison. You had encounters with the brother, all kinds of lies and distortions, but they ended up helping you quite a bit. You ended up surviving through all of it. And then eventually he was deported. Both of them were deported. But you did something that was just incredible to me. With all of this horrific, maniacal behavior on his part, you took your children to see him when he was in prison.
Yes.
Why?
Well, there's a lot that happened in between all that, and when people read the story, maybe they might understand it a tad better, but I really had the compassion, not for him, but for my daughters. I've always had a father in my life, and even though they were young, they were always, as they were growing, they were saying, "Where's Daddy? Where's Daddy?" And they saw the kids around in school and preschool and kindergarten and whatnot, that everybody had their mothers and fathers, and they didn't. So I always had to tell them stories about, "Oh, Daddy's sick and he's not doing well," and always made excuses so I wouldn't detriment them, that I wouldn't severely hurt them mentally by, you know, God forbid, telling them the truth. I mean, they were just way too young to tell them the truth. So I always made these excuses for them so as to protect my daughters. So mm-hmm. my compassion really was for my children, that they would have the opportunity at least to remember once in their life that they did see their dad and they did have moments with their father before he was deported.
Mm-hmm.
So my compassion really was for my two daughters. And to this day, they say, you know, Mom, when they were old enough for me to explain the story to them and they read everything about it and they made their own judgment about this, and I never, ever spoke ill of their father. I just didn't mm-hmm. think that was correct. I knew that they were going to grow up and have minds of their own and make their own decisions on this incident, and whatever decisions they made, it would be their decision, and I was never going to sway them either way to say he's bad and he's no good and that whole family is awful and get away from them. I never did anything like that. I think it's just wrong. I think kids, when they're of age and they grow, they need to make their own choices and decisions and what they feel about people.
Mm-hmm.
And not be brainwashed.
I think that's a very good point.
In
your story,
way.
Hannah, is just absolutely incredible. And when I went through it, I just think it's such a fascinating read. Now, before we went on air, you told me that you've got a little pamphlet, a little booklet that you have put together. Not a pamphlet, a little booklet.
Yes.
Because you want to make women aware that there are things that they have to pay attention to. And I think that you're putting that together, and now you're going to have that. This is something recent that you've done that will go along with the book if anybody wants to purchase it. I think that is extremely important to understand you do have choices. There are ways of dealing with situations like this, and one of the most appalling things that comes about is that women just don't believe that they have options. They're totally, totally manipulated and abused in ways that are just horrific, and they are so frightened they can't even think. They're literally, in my mind's view, brainwashed with fear, and so they can't think clearly. And that's something that your book brings out very, very succinctly, because you have this integrity with your story that I think is extremely vital. And you have a website, livedtotellit.com, livedtotellit.com, and you even have a blog, and of course your book is available everywhere. We have just about 30 seconds left, Hannah. What would you like to leave my listeners with in the way of a thought?
Well, I want to let them know that they should not feel alone. They should not feel that they have no one to turn to. There's always a road to turn to, and that their inner strength and faith is enough to get them out of a bad situation and move them forward towards happiness. And I just urge everyone out there, please get out before he takes you out. We do have choices in this world, and please make the best choices for themselves. They do not have to stay in an abusive relationship. Life is too sweet for that.
I agree. Lived to Tell It. It is absolutely incredible. you will read this book and you'll just go, unbelievable. But remember, we all have programming, could be from cultural backgrounds, societal standards, whatever. But you never, ever have to accept being a victim and enduring things. All martyrs I know of are dead. They're not around. As my guest said, Hannah Murray, life is too sweet to stay in something so violent and so ugly. She'll share with you in the book how you can go from being a victim to being not just a survivor, but someone that lives life with a passion, which is what Hannah does today. Hannah Murray, thank you so much for being my guest today. I'm delighted that you were able to join me. Check out her website, livetotellit.com. She has information on her book and the new booklet that goes along with the book if you purchase it. Hannah, thanks again for being
my
guest.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna
Sebo.
We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. By the way, the newsletter went out yesterday, so for those of you that are subscribers to the free email newsletter, all kinds of good information is in there, and again, that's going to be up on my website. If not today, it'll be there tomorrow. So you can review that by going to DelphiInternational.com. And, of course, the listing always of the upcoming guests is in that newsletter as well as on BBSRadio.com. Hey, if you want to give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of concern to you or of interest to you. Again, 888-627-6008. Well, I've got all kinds of little odds and ends for you today, including a barbecue recipe. I actually have a couple of those. But I wanted to share a little bit of information to you. I've been reviewing so much material, and as you know, if you're a regular listener, I review anywhere from 400 to 600 publications a year. Now, that's a lot of reading, and that doesn't include DVDs, CDs, and other things that come across my desk. But I came across some information, and I was researching and reviewing some material with one of the guests that's going to be coming up this week. In fact, we're going to be talking about healthcare and this type of thing. But there are certain things that have literally disappeared when it comes to diseases. And I found this so intriguing. They probably have shifted into a different category of description. But I wanted to share these three points with you. There was something called the Virgin's disease. Have you ever heard of anything like that? Of course I haven't. Now, there were a lot of women that suffered from this, and
What happened? Now, this goes back to the 1500s. They had green skin, their menses would cease, and they become very, very lethargic. Now, think about that. Green skin. Well, they found that in 1554, this was happening, so they labeled it with the term chlorosis. Now, the condition was, according to their diagnosis in the 1500s, and you gals are just going to love this, the women were either undersexed or, if they were going to a university, of course, they were overeducated, and that's what caused this green disease. Well, there was a father, and they got a letter of this on record. It really was very concerned because his daughter was very ill. The physician said, arrange for your daughter to get pregnant. Don't you just love this stuff back in the 1500s as soon as possible? He said, if they conceive, this is what the physician at that time did. They recover. Now, what's amazing about this is in medical books, this stayed in the textbooks until the 1930s. Now, what this is today, somebody finally developed a different attitude. The green skin is a result in part of anemia. That's right, anemia. So iron supplementation worked. Sex didn't make any difference, but the iron supplementation did. Now I'm chuckling, but can you imagine what horrific things the women went through at that time? And then organ drooping. Now, this is something that women can experience quite a bit, especially with the bladder, and there's various conditions here. Well, you know you've got it, according to the records, if you have headaches, poor sleep. But in the old days, that is what everybody, it's your organs have dropped. Well, women with poor posture had this. Women who had a lot of pregnancies, and in days past, up until even the early 1900s, women, it wasn't unusual. They didn't have birth control. They would have 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 kids. I mean, this is just, they were just baby machines. One of the reasons, again, is they didn't have birth control, and 50% of all children died. It was just really, really bad. So women in the Victorian times wore really, really tight corsets, and it was bad news because it affected their internal organs terribly. If you've ever seen the pictures of the women in corsets, their waists, they were like little wasps. Well, it distorts everything internally, and women really had major medical problems because of that. So what a doctor would do if he placed life pressure on a woman's abdomen, and it made them feel better, organ drooping was taking place as far as their diagnosis. Now, what they found is organs can cause problem if they're repositioned in the body, which is what the corset does. But they said the diagnosis was basically a way for surgeons to make money. Now, think about that. Organ drooping was such a common diagnosis at the end of the 19th century that specialized surgery clinics popped up across the country to treat it. But the popularity of this ended with World War I when surgeons had real problems to take care of. So it disappeared. Also, the corset disappeared. So it's just amazing what goes on. And aren't we fortunate today that we have an awareness of this? And yet there are some people that think that having one of these things on, a corset, is just absolutely wonderfully feminine, and there is a tiny group of women that are still advocates of it, and they promote it, and it's really not healthy. And then the last one I wanted to share with you was English sweat. You know what? This was the diagnosis. That was the term. You knew you had it if you had fever, aches, exhaustion, of course, sweating through your shirt. Now, who doesn't do that? Well, guess what? People were said to die within 24 hours of contracting the symptoms. The only people that got it were people living in England. This is interesting information. In the 1400s, 1500s, that's when this sweating sickness came out. And it came out in the summer months,
And only once did an outbreak that occurred in England, this is the only place where they have records where this occurred, made it beyond the English borders. What's behind it? Now, it's not there now. It was poor hygiene. And think about what we do today. Hygiene is something we just take for granted. We have our sewage treatment centers. We have, you know, toilets where we aren't throwing stuff out the windows like they did in England, you know, years past. But the scientists of today still aren't sure what caused the sweating sickness. They think it might have been a flu type of virus fed by filth or by rodents. And you know what? The rich could outrun it. They usually didn't get it. King Henry VIII was so scared of contracting or the sweat that he moved around the country from manor to manor trying to outrun it. Just a little bit of medical trivia. One of the leading elements to better health is good hygiene. That is so important. Washing your hands, bathing, keeping the body clean, your environment clean. It is so very important. When you have filth around you, that is when you are going to have a lot of diseases that are going to come about. That one component, good sanitation, proper disposal of sewage, really makes a difference. And so this is what has enabled us to actually live longer. Infections came about because of unsanitary conditions. Instruments were not boiled by doctors, you know, just all kinds of things that were not done years ago because they couldn't see microbes. They couldn't see this stuff. So today, people are starting to get sloppy in many areas. They're getting sloppy about taking care of themselves, about bathing, making sure you keep things clean. All of this is causing, when you have this kind of behavior, it causes a rise in certain kinds of diseases and conditions that maybe had disappeared for a long time. It really does make a difference. And that's why the Native Americans, for so many centuries, they learned about this, and many of them were migrating because they didn't have toilets, they didn't have sewage treatment systems, and so wherever they were, they knew they had to keep moving, just like wild animals do, because otherwise you're going to have problems because you don't have the sanitation. You can't keep things clean. So it's really a fascinating phenomena of history. When you go back into the supposed good old days, and they weren't so good. People really died frequently, especially women. They rarely could live to be too old age. And the adage at the time was if you went into, quote-unquote, the hospitals as they had been established, you were likely to die from infection that you would get in the hospital. Guess what we're having today? Same kind of thing. Sanitation is very, very important. So keeping things clean, keeping things sterilized, all of this makes a difference. History is amazing. And the saying that if you don't learn from history, you're bound to repeat the same mistakes is a very true one. Donna Sebo here. I've got a wonderful barbecue recipe that I wanted to share with you. A little bit of trivia regarding the past I've shared with you, and I've got some other good things to share as well. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. By the way, before we go to break, let me let you know about the guests we have today. We're going to be talking with Jeremy McDonald tomorrow. His book is titled Peace Be Still. This is a man who walked a route, I'll call it, of self-exploration and self-discovery that I think you're going to enjoy. He's a real nice guy. And then on the 4th of July, I have got a young man, Brett Sheldon, that is just, to me, the epitome of what we celebrate. Independence, self-sufficiency, and freedom. That's what the element of the 4th of July should represent. And his book is titled Kicking the Odds. He is a fine young man. You're really going to enjoy his story. So he's going to be with us on the 4th of July. And then we're going to be talking with Edmund Valentine on Thursday about the U.S. health care. Now, this is very controversial, but he is bringing out information about what is changing in the healthcare industry without the government interference what's going on, what is happening in the background. He has been involved in the industry for 27 years, and some of it is really quite amazing. And then Dr. Grayson is going to be with us on Friday, how to use your body to heal your mind. So we've got a dynamic listing of guests. If you want to find out more, check out the information right here on bbsradio.com. There's a listing of all the guests that come up. You can also go to my website and check that out, too. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, grab that pad of paper and pen. I've got a delightful recipe. This one is so simple. But if you're going to be barbecuing and perhaps you've got a big to-do that's going to be happening on July 4th and you want to fix something that is a little bit different, I think you're going to find this recipe for beef rolls is really very, very good. And this is how simple it is. You just need 2 1/4 pounds of top round, 2 1/4 pounds of top round, about a 6-ounce bag of leaf spinach, and then you need 1 1/8 to 1 1/4 pounds of bacon slices. You're going to need 5 cloves. You're going to need some garlic, olive oil, and a little bit of salt and pepper. And this is for barbecuing. You could do this under the broiler if you didn't have a barbecue. You're going to need some double-prong metal skewers that you use specifically for grilling. And then you're going to need some small wooden skewers that'll just be perfect for serving this. Of course, this recipe can be doubled or tripled for however big a crowd you're going to have. Now, this is what you do. You take your top round and you cut it into very thin, flat slices. And they should be maybe, about 3/4 to 1 1/8 in inches, but generally in that line. And if you want to have an easier time cutting it, put your top round into the freezer until it is just slightly frozen, and it has a firmness. And then you can take a very sharp knife, and then you can cut it into these real thin slices. Now, you want to take your garlic. You want to dice it. And, of course, the spinach leaves, you want to have the stems removed from the spinach leaves. And you're going to take your meat, put it in a bowl, salt and pepper it a little bit, add your garlic and some olive oil, and stir everything well. And just let it be. You can do this the night before.
Caller.
Thank you. Just do this, let it be. I know we've got a caller, and I'll get to the caller right away. Let me finish this up. Then what you do, you roll up each slice of meat with a spinach leaf and a half a slice of bacon and put it on a double skewer. And depending on the size of the skewer, you can put 5 to 7 rolls on each skewer. Then you grill the skewers directly for 1 minute on each side and then cook them 5 minutes in indirect heat. Really good stuff. So you can prepare the meat the day ahead and have it all ready. Roll it all up, and you've got something luscious that'll go with just about anything. Let's go to our first caller today. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hello, Donna. This is Pat in Connecticut.
Hi, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Getting ready for the holiday?
Oh, yeah.
It's a big one in Connecticut. Well, it's big everywhere.
But I know in Connecticut,
yes,
you've got a lot of history, so there's just a real special level of celebration for the 4th. Well, what I wanted to do, Pat, right off the bat, is just say to you, first thing, be consistent. Don't change your mind and go back and forth. In other words, have enough faith in yourself that your decision-making that you're evolving through is going to work. Don't try to add too much more, though, to your plate of responsibilities. What you want to do is follow through with your decisions, make sure you've got all loose ends in place, and then go forward with the next one. So it seems like prioritizing is going to be pretty important. But just hold true. Don't bounce back and forth. And I know you're going to get opinions. You've got a few people in your life that are very opinionated, but who isn't at one time or another? And I think you just need to hold true to what you know is right for yourself. Be open to people's concepts and information and this type of thing, but really look at what is most important to you. And if you hold true and you don't bounce around, you're really going to have quite a nice summer. What's on your mind?
Hmm. Oh, thank you. And you mentioned history. Speaking of history, first of all, forgive me if I've already asked you this question. I have problems with memory, short-term memory at times, but I'm helping the present owner of the house that I grew up in as a child. It's 300 years old. And everybody's wondering what the new owners are going to do with it. I may have asked you this, Donna. I'm sorry. We also have a feeling that they may change it to a business, or we're just concerned that it's not going to remain as this beautiful, wonderful house.
Well, you've already sold it. Correct?
It's been sold. I'm not moving out of it. The present owners, I grew up as a child, and I'm not there now. But yes, they sold it.
Well, I really think that you don't waste your time with concern. But what I would suggest is that if you can, write up a little bit of history about the house, and the fact that it might be considered for use as a business establishment is great, but it's 300 years old. The more history they know about it, the more that they might be interested in preserving certain aspects. But there are parts of it that really should be ripped out because it has deteriorated. So I think if I could make a suggestion to you, one, release your concern. Two, take a proactive approach relative to informing them of the history, and that you would just be delighted to be able to assist them with any historical information. And they may well put it on the historical listing. However, they've got to be very thoughtful because the economics of being in the place and living in it as it is just are not very good. So they're going to have to upgrade it, and I think that's what they want to do. But I would just cultivate...
What's not very good?
There are certain parts of the house that are not in good shape.
Oh, okay.
So romanticizing about it, I just don't think is appropriate, but I think bringing them the information about the history of the house, and there's some things they need to do if they choose to make it a historical place for whatever reason...
Uh-huh.
They want to be able to make their repairs or whatever they need to do prior to doing that. Because too often, depending on the laws and the regulations, they can't change a pipe without going through all kinds of difficulty. So I think...
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't get stressed over this. Don't worry about it. Because the people that moved into it really will appreciate the history. And I would just cultivate that association.
That's great. You're right. I am romanticizing about it. I'm also going to send them a letter to see if I can work for them, even just clean the house, because I love the place so much.
That's fine. Hun, I'm sorry. I've got to go. I'm out of time. I hate to do this to you, Pat, but I am out of time. But don't romanticize about this. You do whatever you feel comfortable doing, but get your information together first.
Okay.
All right, my dear? Take care. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, the time just goes by so quickly. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are not a victim in life. That is not what you're supposed to be. Just like my guest Hannah today, you can have things happen to you that are downright horrific. But it's what you do with your experiences and how you make them turn around that creates you as an individual, as a powerhouse, as someone that has the courage to face life with clarity and purpose and not feeling blindsided because of fear. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much for being with me. We'll be chatting with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.